believe is starting to be requested in people's cars. There it is. It's the Next Level Podcast, a podcast that covers all things Ridgeview sports. From Ridgeview High School in Columbia, South Carolina, meet the student athletes, coaches, staff, admin, and more that make View County truly next level. Ridgeview High School competes in Region 5, 4A of the South Carolina High School League. Has been serving the Northeast Columbia community since 1995. We have 13 state championships and 13 state runners-up. You can learn more about our athletic department at ridgeviewsports.com and across all social media platforms at Ridgeview Sports. My name is Brian Rosefield, the athletic director here at Ridgeview High School, and I'm joined by our head cheerleading coach, Alyssa Burris. Coach, how are you?
I'm good, Coach. I'm good. It's always good to sit down with you in the pod lab. I feel like I was kicked to the curb for a little bit with Coach Proctor, but wow, we're back.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, we talk about real feelings here around our athletic department, so let's go. No, I'm just kidding. We won't get into that on the air, but we do. We talk about that often. We have a special relationship around here with coaches and admin and teachers. We reason things out with each other. We work through things. We don't sit on things. We don't get resentful. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of hyperbole. Sometimes I get resentful, but most of the time we work it out, and that's good, healthy living.
Right, and I feel like I'm only going to talk about you, when you can defend yourself.
So, ooh.
Coach Proctor, when next time he sees me, he going to catch these hands. Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Okay, all right, we'll record that, and that'll be fun. Well, it's another summertime edition of the Next Level Podcast, and it's another edition of Who's at the View. And today, I mentioned admin on the opening read. We have one of our assistant principals, our assistant principal for instruction, Megan Culbertson. Welcome to the Next Level Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are excited, and we appreciate you making the commitment. You're coming this week, and thank you. You are coming back next week for a two-parter. It's unbelievable that I know you don't have the time, but we appreciate you making the time to be able to do that.
Anything for y'all.
No.
Yes, we're pulling her out of our office 2 weeks in a row. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to get it done, Coach.
We're going to get it done. And this is, like I said, this is a Who's at the View episode. But then as we were talking pre-show and the producers' meetings, as it were, talking about two topics that you have really that you want to be able to talk about, the academics and what it's like being a coach's wife as well. So we'll get to that later on. But this is the Who's at the View part. Tell us all the things. Where are you from? What brought you to Ridgeview? Give us an outline of Megan Culbertson.
So I am from a little town called Blue Ridge, South Carolina. It's in Greenville County. Most people don't associate Greenville County and Blue Ridge High School together because it's almost North Carolina. And it's a small school. I think people finally know about Blue Ridge because they won their first state championship in school history last year.
So. Oh, nice.
It was very interesting. I was at Ridgeview when we won our basketball state championship, but then Blue Ridge, which was my alma mater, won the same year, which was a cool little coincidence. But that is where I'm from. I grew up on a farm in a small town, so country girl at heart. And then I went to Anderson University for college, and I cheered there. And then that was all during, like, 2008, and everyone was like, you have to just get a job wherever you can find one. And so I moved to Charleston, and I started teaching there, coaching cheerleading at a small school, Woodland High School in Dorchester 4. So once I left there, my husband, we were dating prior to that, got married during living in Charleston, and then he took a head coaching job in North Carolina in Harnett County. So that moved us to North Carolina. We had children there, and then being 6 hours away from family was tough. So it was, how do we get back to South Carolina? And the coaching world is very small, as y'all all know. And someone reached out to him about a strength coach, and then he started applying. And that's what got us to the Columbia area, where I accepted the job at Ridgeview as the API.
We are excited that he got that phone call and excited that you answered the call to be able to come to Ridgeview.
Yes.
And looking at the map at Blue Ridge High School, this is really kind of like in the, would it be considered the Tri-Cities area between Tigerville, the bustling metropolis of Highland and Lake Robinson. It just looks like there's a lot going on over there.
So Lake Robinson is a tiny little pond compared to the, you can only have like a 9.9 motor boat on Lake Robinson. It's super small, but you can go fishing. That's about it.
Looks like it's a beautiful part of the state. Coach Burris, are you familiar with the upstate? Is it the upstate of South Carolina? There's some some really cool small towns and some beautiful, beautiful landscape up there.
Not even in the slightest.
No. Okay.
It is beautiful. Most people know it because they're like, oh, Greenville. And I'm like, well, I'm 45 minutes from Greenville. I'm also 45 minutes from Asheville. So it's kind of like this sweet little like niche of country, mountains, can get to downtown Greenville. I hated it growing up there. There was no traffic lights, one gas station, and I don't know, probably 20 minutes to a grocery store. So, like, it was just the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I have a very similar upbringing as far as growing up in Blythewood, but we know what Blythewood looks like now. I'm sure Blue Ridge has not grown very much in the past.
If you ask my dad, he says that everyone has moved to Blue Ridge because they've added a traffic light. So
no. The traffic light makes a huge difference, though.
And there's now a Dollar General, which was very upsetting to the community.
I can imagine that. I always wonder how some of these businesses pick certain spots. And Dollar General seems to be in, I've been around small towns a lot of my life, and there seems to be a Dollar General in a lot of the small towns.
Every small town I've gone into, I've seen a Dollar General. Like, I can ride down 74 in Charleston, and there'd be nothing for miles. And then, oh, look, a Dollar General.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can understand, too, that people get upset about that. And, you know, I'm from Sumter, which is, I don't want to say is a small town, but there are a lot of small towns around there with no traffic lights. You pass through and you see the little sign of where you're going through, Alkaloo being one of them down there in the Manning area. And then you look the other way, you go about another mile and that's it. You're through Alkaloo. So it sounds like a little bit of your upbringing.
Yes.
And obviously we're in the cheered at Anderson for 4 years.
I did.
So you know what it's like to be a student athlete.
Yeah. So Blue Ridge was also really good at cheerleading. We won a state championship when I was a freshman. So we're just really competitive. I think we were just a competitive town, competitive people. You had to work hard for everything. And I don't think it always showed in Blue Ridge, but we always worked hard for everything we did. And I think that's a lot of like who I am today. It was just, you have to work your butt off for everything that you do and everything that you get. And then I went to Anderson and cheered there for, I did not finish my senior year because I was student teaching full-time and I had to work full-time. Mm. And there just wasn't enough hours in the day to have to teach full-time as a student teacher and cheer and have to work. And so I gave up cheer my second semester. But I was still the trainer for the basketball team. So, I taped their ankles and did all that. But they paid me. So
Oh, wow. Nice.
I kept that.
Nice. And I mean, I love that you went on when you moved to Charleston for that first job after college to coach cheer. Let me ask you a little bit about, you know, you and your husband, y'all were dating prior to the move to Charleston. Was he coaching at that same time also?
Yes. My husband has always been a coach. I joke with him regularly and say he is not a teacher. He's a coach because he went into education to coach. He's a PE teacher. My joke is if you interview with an athletic director before an administrator, that's your role. And he's never interviewed first with a principal. That's always like round two. And I know what that's like as the API here because we get ideas and we get people from coaches or someone that's wanting to come to your school. And so that's always been his role. He's met with a football coach, an athletic director. And when we first started dating, he coached football and baseball.
Oh, wow.
So
he's a busy man.
Very, yes.
And I love that perspective too, obviously, as an AD. If I'm talking to somebody first or they've already talked to one of our coaches and then I'm talking to them and then it's like, oh, by the way, hey, Ms. Culbertson, Dr. Mack, what do you think about this person? Then maybe they are a coach first. But, hey, I prefer to look at it as we're all educators, right? We're all educators, whether we're teaching a sport or teaching a class or administrating things like that, right?
Or, you know, I don't know, being the API's assistant.
Uh-oh.
Because I didn't know y'all for the first 2 years, but I interviewed with you first, Coach Russell.
But it's always like you know what your role is. Like you start out in the coaching world or you start out in the education world, and then sometimes they marry and they come together, but it's always interesting. But, yeah, my husband has definitely always been a coach. He was coaching at Berkeley High School. Mm-hmm. When we first got down there, and I was in Dorchester 4.
Well, I feel like that's a good segue, a lead into our topic for this week. And again, we'll have you back next week to talk more about academics. But being a coach's wife, give us some perspective, give us some thoughts, some of the things that maybe you've seen, some of the things that maybe you've heard, but just overall, what is it like really being a coach's wife and really being in education as well?
So I think the biggest thing is that you have to know that your husband is committed to other people's children. And I knew that before we got married, because it is such a time commitment for, no offense, very little money for the amount of time that you spend doing it. So I've always believed, and my husband has believed, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about God on the podcast, but that it was like our passion and our mission and what God has called us to do, to work with children and be in the lives of children. So when we started dating, I was going to games, and it was really more for the, you know, newly 13 years ago, you know, I was going to see him because if I didn't go to his games, when did I see him? Mm-hmm. Or I would bring him Chick-fil-A before a football game or before something, because if not, he didn't eat. And so I think that's an interesting, like, I don't know if the outside world and parents realize the amount of time that coaches give to their children. And so as a wife, you have to know that about your husband. Like, I'm never going to go on a Friday night date with my husband during football season.
Like, I know, there's no question about that.
Like, that's never going to happen. My husband didn't go to my brother's rehearsal dinner for his wedding because rehearsal dinner was on a Friday night, and it was the third round of the playoffs. He wasn't going. He met me at the wedding the next day. We drove separate. So there's so many things that I have a joke, and I'm like, no, we can't. It's football season. Mm. Like, that's just the don't ask me to do anything from August to December. We're out.
So now that you guys have kids and, you know, you are an admin here at Ridgeview, how do you balance that time being able to see your husband, especially during football season?
So because I say it's a ministry and we believe in it, I go to his games. I take our kids to the games because I feel like they need to know what their dad is doing. Like, why is he away? Why is he doing what he's doing? So we believe that it is truly a commitment. It's a family decision that we are a coaching family. Because if you don't, I think that it can be very easy to be resentful in a marriage or in a life if you don't believe that you're a part of that vision or you're a part of that mission. So for us, like, I go to games. In the summer, me and the boys, so I have a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, for the people listening that don't know, we take popsicles up to the football practice once a week. So that way they see that they're a part of this. So my boys, you know, they're just the little icy popsicles, but they love giving them out to the players. It costs me, you know, $20 to get popsicles, but the boys get to see that. Mm-hmm. And they get to see that they're a part of it, and then they learn who the players are. So when we sit there on Friday night, they know who they're cheering for. They feel a part of it. So, and I think that's just important. At the same time, if we don't do that, we don't get to see Blake very much either. Mm-hmm. So we go because it's just a part of what we do.
You know, I heard somebody years ago talk about, you asked the question about balance, and I think it's a great question, and how in education maybe balance isn't even, when it comes to family life, might not even be possible. The word might be integration. And that's what I'm hearing with taking the boys, bringing popsicles and going to games, going to practices, all those things, the integrating. And then another thing that I love that I'm hearing you say is this is a true partnership with you and Blake. It's like, hey, we're in this together. We're very clear about what we're doing, why we're doing it. Our boys are coming along for the ride. We're all going the same direction. I think that's awesome.
And because we are passionate about it, like, and right, there is a balance. Like, I know that my husband cannot give 100% to our family. We just agree that when we come to the table, me and him together have to make 100%. And sometimes that doesn't always look 50-50, because it can't. My husband has to give a lot to other people. There's times in being an API here at Ridgeview that I have to give a lot to other people. So there's times in our marriage that in football season, I joke and I say that I'm 80 and he's 20. Mm-hmm. But when that switches, sometimes there's a point where he's the 80 and I'm the 20. But we just know that together to make our family successful, we have to bring 100% to the table. And so it fluctuates throughout the season. We are now at a point where he's only coaching football. It was much harder pre, let's see, LB and Whip both did one season of him coaching two sports. But that last season was really tough of baseball, because baseball has games multiple times during a week. So it was very hard when I had, my boys are only 13 months apart. So that first season, Whit was like 4 months old and I had like a 15-month-old, 16-month-old. So I had like two under two the first baseball season. And that was when I was like, because when he told me we could move to South Carolina and he would only have to coach one sport, that was kind of like the selling factor of like, okay, if you only have to coach one sport. Because right. in North Carolina, as a PE teacher, he was required to coach two sports. And so for him, he was like, well, I'm not going to coach something I don't like to coach. Because I was like, why can't you coach tennis or something that's not as time consuming? But that was not a choice. So.
And I love how, like, Coach Roseville, you just said a moment ago, like the integration, like the fact that y'all were able to integrate so many different factors of your life to understand each other, to know both being in the educational field, but like as an admin, you have a lot of time that is dedicated this to this school in the same way that he has to coaching a sport. So that integration is wonderful, and I love that for you. And I want to ask also, when you are out at his games and things like that, like, not really what's your expectations, but like, how is it for you, especially having the boys and knowing that your husband is out on the field and it's no longer, you know, we're just here to support Blake. We're here to support what he's doing with these kids.
And I think that's the hardest part, because it's easy to become resentful, especially I say there's the two easiest places to coach is from a bleacher or a recliner. And some people can get very upset by that expression. But if you're not invested and you're not the one doing it, it's very easy to be critical and be critical of a coach and a critical of their decision. So I have found myself, y'all know me in this room, but I can have a bit of a smart mouth at times, and I'm quick to say whatever I think. So I learned early on in his coaching career that I had to separate myself from certain people and from certain fans, because as much as I've been on seasons that have been very successful, winning state championships and fantastic years, to going 0-11. So, like, I have seen both sides. I've been for great seasons. And I would say probably the hardest seasons were when, you know, the talent wasn't there from the year before. And parents don't like to hear that. You know, I mean, you can only do so much with X's and O's. Like, you got to have some Jimmies and Joes as well. And so if you don't have those players, the parents think that it automatically becomes coaching. And I want to be like, your kid doesn't show up for practice. You took two vacations this year. Those are things that I know as a coach's wife, but I can't say that to a parent because my husband's like, you got to keep your mouth shut. you know, because I'm thinking like, you didn't even come to workouts this summer. And now you want to complain during the season. And it's such a tough balance because I joke and say being a coach's wife is a lot like being a preacher's wife. You always have to have your, like, game face on. You have to show up. You have to be wearing the school colors. You always have to look happy. But realistically, I've worked a full day. I've ran and picked our kids up. I've changed their clothes in the car. I have fed them dinner in the car. I bring pajamas, and I give them a wet white bath and put their pajamas on because my kids fall asleep in the car. And then I convert them to bed by themselves. That's the night of me as a coach's wife. And I mean, I drive a minivan, and literally there's a football bag that stays in the back because there's one container that is nothing but stuff for my kids at football games. That's where their pajamas go, their change of clothes, their snacks, all their things that they need for us to be able to survive a night at a football game, because I do it by myself. Because there's no, like, asking my husband for help because he's catering to the needs of someone else's child. Right. So, I mean, that is the hard part of it. But there's been some years that I've had a kid's mom that she, my husband was coaching offensive line at the time, and she met me in my car every Friday night and helped me get my kids into the game. Because she was like, I know what it's like to have little kids.
Yeah, it takes a village. It takes a village.
And then other times I've had to explain to my kids, why are they talking about my dad? And I've had to say, baby, they don't understand. You know, like, they're seeing this. And they're like, but they don't even know us. And that's a hard conversation to have with a five-year-old when they don't understand why someone's talking bad about their dad. So I guess for me, just for outsiders listening, like understanding who's listening, who's around, and what sort of investment they've put into someone else's child, because my kids take the back burner sometimes for someone else's kid. For me and for my husband, there's times that I've supported someone else's child at the expense of my own. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. So for anyone listening, if you see a coach's wife, like, offer to carry the bag, be supportive, and let them know that, like, because I've joked, I'm like, listen, my husband went to school for a full ride to play football. Like, he's trying to help your kid get there. So just, like, listen, you know, he's not doing it for the money. He's not doing it for the time away from his children and his family. He's doing it because he's passionate about helping someone else. So just anytime you think to say something negative about a coach, just know that there's a family that's supported the desire to make your child better. Mm.
I think that's super powerful. That's going to help a lot of people. And what I'm hearing in that is parents are passionate about their sons and their daughters and their grand, you know, the people within their family. They're passionate. And they may disagree with coaches. They may disagree with athletic administrators. And being able to differentiate or delineate, whichever the word is there, I'm only a high school educator, I'm not sure, between attacking the decision and maybe attacking the person.
Right. Because at the end of the day, like, the coach on the field is making the decision which is best for the team, for the ultimate outcome. And we do get one-track minded looking at what was best for my child, but they're looking at the whole picture. And you have to trust that the coach is making the best decision for everyone involved, because they just wouldn't be doing what they're doing if they didn't have a passion for your kid. Mm. And sometimes I think that's hard for parents to see, but because I've said it to a parent, and I probably, one of those times I should have kept my mouth shut, but I was like, ma'am, I'm going to rewatch this game in the morning on film 3 different times. I'm going to rewatch your son miss that block 14 times on huddle. So you have 2 choices. You can either help. Helping could be help. Come home with me. Help me put my kids to bed. Come watch film with us tomorrow. But yelling right now and telling me all these things, it's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of the most powerful things that you just said a couple minutes ago was about people coaching from either the stands, the bleachers, and things like that. Because I've caught myself as a coach, you know, watching a basketball game and being like, why is he doing da 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 da? And then the next day I've gone up to Coach Staley, our basketball coach here, and been like, well, why'd you do X, Y, and Z? Like, shouldn't you have done it this way? And he was like, no, there's a lot more that goes into what I made the decision to call said play instead of, you know, just what you see. And I'm like, oh, okay. But there's so much behind the scenes that us as stands, or in the stands, excuse me, as spectators, don't see and don't realize what's going on. Because it's quick to say something like, why didn't you do da 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 da? And you have no idea what's going on.
And the even harder part is being the coach's wife, knowing that you do know all those back things, but you're not allowed to say it because those were a conversation that you had as a husband and wife at home that I can't be like, I remember this one parent so upset that her son wasn't getting to play. And he was benched for the first few series of plays. And the mom was so upset. But I knew, because at this time I was working at the school as a math teacher there when my husband was coaching, that her kid got in trouble and was suspended from school. And that was the, like, another part of, like, he wasn't where he was supposed to be, so there was additional mm-hmm. consequences. But I wanted to be like, ma'am, your child got in trouble at school for being somewhere he wasn't supposed to. You know, but she was putting it out to all of these people around her that the coaches were out to get her kid. And so I'm just, like, sitting there being like, Megan, you can't say anything because, A, you work at the school, so I can't say what I know because the kid was suspended from my class. On top of that, like, my husband told me the backstory of where he was and what he was doing, which wasn't a conversation I could have publicly. But, you know all of these things, but you just have to remain quiet or you have to remove yourself. So when my husband was a head coach, he used to bring a bag chair for me and a wagon full of my kids' stuff. He would roll it out, and I sat in the end zone. Like, in the grassy part right there behind the end zone, that's where I sat for 5 years or 6 years. I just removed myself from the stands because I just couldn't take it. I couldn't take feeling like everything that I said was going to be judged or taken out of context, or if I said anything, or if I didn't say anything, that I wasn't being friendly. Like, it was just too much for me to try to figure out and have my kids there. So me, another coach's wife, we both had small kids. We sat in the end zone, and we were just like, we don't speak to anyone. We waited until everyone left, and then we just hightailed it to the car. Because those years, there was some very difficult parents. And they just would come up to us and be like, a parent came up to me and, like, shook her finger in my face and said, you need to tell Coach Colbertson this. And I said, I don't know him. And she just looked at me, and I was like, I don't know Coach Colbertson. He's not my coach. I was like, if you have a coaching concern, you can go speak to the coach. But he's my husband at home. He's the father of my children. If you have a coaching question, go speak to him. And they just were like, looking at me like, would you ever go up to like a doctor's wife and be like, why did you give that medicine? You just wouldn't do that. You would trust the person that's in charge. You would trust the person that was hired for the job. But
it's such a unique industry.
It is.
George Glenn, I've mentioned him often on this podcast. God rest his soul. One of my mentors, great guy. He used to tell parents that I never sat in a parent meeting, but I know it was true. He said he would tell parents, he said, in his parent meeting, I'm not coming to your job to tell you how to do your job. So don't come to mine and tell me how to do my job. I'm a basketball coach here around the state and in the NBA. And what a beautiful boundary it is. And still, it is not laughable. It's somewhat humorous to see where I'm like you, Coach Burris. Like, I'll watch some of our coaches do things, or I'll watch other coaches like, why are you doing? Oh, wait. I'm not there every day. Right. I don't know those students like they do every day. They know that they skipped class, or they know that they did this or did that, or they know time, score, and situation that these kids right here are going to give us the best chance to win. And I'm still a fan, and I want to win. It's just such a, I think there's one thing that I wrote down is there's so many lessons to be learned around sports by coaches, parents, students. I mean, it's such a fascinating area.
And another thing I say, it's like kind of my quote as a coach's wife, it's for the love of the game, but for the sake of the boys. And I have a shirt, and we've said it a zillion times, for the love of the game. I love the game of football. I love it. I've always loved it. I love what it teaches. I love what athletics instills in young people. I love the work ethic that it teaches. And sometimes I think sports teach a lot more than academics ever could in certain ways, just because of the grit and the work ethic that comes from it. And I think that's why I'm passionate about it. But at the end of the day, like, the win is great. But it's much better that, like, I've now gone to weddings of kids that my husband has coached. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you become invested in their lives because my husband has helped formed these young boys into men that are now fathers and getting married. Like, that's much bigger than that win, or God forbid, that close loss, right? Like, at the end of the day, there's a bigger picture. And I think it's easier for us to see the big picture because you've gone through season after season of the wins, the losses, the next group that comes in. But at the end of the day, like, the bigger picture is that they're becoming great people. Or when you meet someone and they're like, God, they were really difficult as a player. They were not doing what they needed to do. But then you see them 5 years later and they've graduated college. They've been successful. They have their own business or whatever they're doing. That's the bigger picture that I think football teaches. And that sometimes being a tough coach teaches. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's okay. Like, I've been yelled at as an adult in my career. But so many times parents are like, don't yell at my kid, or don't get on to them. You know, that was too rough, or that was too harsh, or that was too whatever we want to say. But at the end of the day, those are the conversations that build the character to be able to be successful later in life. And so I say all the time, for the love of the game, but for the sake of the boys. We do it for them. We do it for the boys and for girls too. But I've been a coach's wife of all boys. So, I mean, I loved cheer, but I cheered because I loved football. I cheered because I loved basketball. So it was always for the outcome of the children. I mean, my husband this morning had to leave early to go pick four kids up to make it a football practice.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah, no, but I love what you said, because that's a big part of our next level mantra here at Ridgeview is building the experience for the kids, because at the end of the day, they may not remember that close loss, or they're going to remember their state championships or whatever happens. But like those first 10 games of the season, unless something crazy happened, they're going to remember the experience, not the score.
That's right. And that's, I think this is where we need to go ahead and pause this episode here, because everything that you're saying, Ms. Culbertson, and everything that you just said about next level and the growth and the experience of the students, that's what we're doing as high school educators. They're going to, kids are going to win. Students are going to win. They're going to lose. They're going to have successes. They're going to have failures. But what I just wrote down was, are they playing full out? And that might be our theme for this coming year. Just give you and all of our listeners a heads up. I always have a theme for this, for all of our coaches. This past year it was hope. Mm-hmm. Let's give our students some hope through sports. And so maybe it's going to be playing full out, meaning these students, are they going to show up to every workout, to every game, have their minds clear, be free of fear, and go out there and give it everything they have, win or lose, and learn all of these lessons along the way that we're talking about. I think it's a beautiful thing. So, Ms. Culbertson, wow, thank you for episode one of two. We'll be back with you next week. I don't know. It's gonna be another good one. But we thank you for coming in into the Next Level Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And like I said, we'll be back here Monday, Coach Burris. We'll do it again.
Yes.
What do you say?
Yes. We're gonna pull her out of our office one more time next Monday. As always. View County, baby.